Morning. Today's daf Nida Samech Zayin. We're on Samech Vav Amud Beis. A lot of halachas today. We're going to be weaving in and out of Hilchos Nida, Hilchos Tefila, preparation for the mikvah. A lot of short staccato halachas. Let's begin where we left off yesterday. Samech Vav Amud Beis. We are with Amar Rav. It's the second wide line down. A short daf from yesterday. Gemara yesterday treated us to a number of halachas of Rava. If you go back to the Samach Vav Amud Aleph of yesterday, so we learned tremendous chumras that were instituted. One by Rav, he went out to the sados, he went out to the fields. Rashi over there explained yesterday's daf. Fields doesn't mean fields, it means people, the out-of-towners. No offense to us. So the out-of-towners, and basically what he did is he gave them a simplified version of Hilchos Nida. I say simplified, meaning that it did accept a couple of chumras, but it made the Hilchos Nida, the Shiva Yimei Nida, the 11 days of Yimei Ziva, he made it a lot easier. And it was a very simple instruction manual, and so that's what Rav did in the Sados. And then Rabbi Zera comes along, is obviously a later tkufa than that of Rav, and Rabbi Zera says that Yichmir Benos Yisrael Atzman, that the Jewish women have accepted upon themselves a minug, which is as that they see tipas dam kechardal, just a small amount of blood, and they treat it like zava gadola, requiring shivanikiyim after every time they have any kind of discharge whatsoever. And this is the accepted halacha. This is halacha psuka. We're going to get to brachos, and we're going to see the Gemara brachos describe this as halacha psuka. It is something which is totally accepted. No pushback, no back and forth. And this is the accepted halacha. As I pointed out yesterday, interesting, the Gemara in Nida saved this, reserved this, so to say, all the way to the end of the Masechta. But that's the halacha psuka. After that, the Gemara then went over numerous statements of Rava. We had a siman at the bottom of Samech Vav Amud Aleph to help us remember all the halachas of Rava. We learned yesterday the first halacha was Dam Chimud. A woman agrees to get married. She gets excited. So there's something called Dam Chimud, an expectation that there's going to be a small discharge at the time where she accepts where she accepts marriage as basically a function of her excitement that she's getting married. Okay. Second halacha of Rava is in Chavifa. What detergents or soaps she should use or not use. While preparing herself for the mikvah, that's the mitzvah of chafifa. We're coming back to that a little bit later today. The general halacha of chafifa. When a woman bathes, she should be bathing in hot water, washing her hair in hot water. And that was the third halacha of Rava. In terms of what parts of her body she should clean, even the areas that are normally folded over, as we're going to learn later this morning. When she goes into the mikvah, just regular. In other words, she doesn't have to do any kind of stretching or any unfolding of her body, but in terms of the cleaning of the areas have to be clean and free of any type of chatzitza. Why? So again, another big halacha yesterday, also Rabbi Zera, and that is that kol arei labila. Kol arei labila is a halacha that in certain areas in halacha, so you don't need actual, but you do need potential. You need the ability to. So when it comes to menachos, when you're mixing the flour and the oil, so there has to, you don't have to mix it together, you don't have to actually mix it together, but there must be enough oil within the flour so that it could distribute and it could mix together. And the halacha is the same thing with the folded areas of the body and the mouth as well. In other words, the water of the mikvah does not have to go into your mouth. I'm sure everyone's happy to hear that. Let's say, yeah, right. But at least there has to be the potential for the water to go into your mouth. That's the.
There's an opinion that says you should, right? Every opening should be open when you go to a mikvah.
Potentially.
No. Okay. It's fine. So that's the kol haroi, and that was the halacha of Rabbi Zera. And now we are continuing with another halacha of Rava. And so this is where we left off yesterday. We're picking up this morning. And two lines down from the top, two lines down from the lines get wide. Amar Rava. Tavla v'alta v'nimsa ala davar chotzeitz. So she tovels in the mikvah. She comes up from the mikvah. And what she discovers is that there's something on her body. Foreign item on her body. Foreign matter on her body. Which would have been a chotzeitz as she tovels in the mikvah. And the question here is a really simple one. Meaning, she did prepare herself going into the mikvah. She washed herself. She checked herself before going into the mikvah. She went into the mikvah, and now it was discovered afterwards. So it's a classic question of the Gemara. When did it happen? Did it happen before she went to the mikvah? Did it happen after she went to the mikvah? And what is our general assumption? So on this, the Gemara brings down the following. So is she finds something imsa mechachafifa tavla eno sarach lichvol velitvol. So let's say she tavled in the mikvah immediately after she did chafifa. So the interval of time between her chafifa, that's her washing of herself, and the tvila was nothing. Just she went straight from chafifa to tvila. So now we have the room to assume that this chatzitza occurred after she tovel in the mikvah. V'yamla tzrich halacha v'litvol. Otherwise, she has to do the chafifa again and tovel again. Meaning, if she gives herself any cushion of time, now I'd like to say it a little bit clearer in terms of what we're talking about in terms of a cushion of time. But if there is an interval of time between the washing of herself and toveling in the mikvah, so now that leads us to at least suspect that the chatzitza she discovered afterwards was actually on there beforehand, and therefore she has to do chafifa again, and she has to tovel again. Igidami now in a slightly different version of this statement of Rava. In ba'osa yamshik chafifa tavla, ein tzricha lichvol lachof v'litvol. V'imlav tzricha lachof v'litvol. So here in the second version, it's osa hayom. As long as it's within the same day in which she did the chafifa and she tovel in the mikvah, and then she discovered something afterwards, so then we're comfortable. We can comfortably say, oh, it happened. The chatzitza occurred afterwards. However, if it wasn't on the same day, so then we will therefore say that the chatzitza occurred beforehand, and she'll have to tovel in the mikveh again. Okay, so it's essentially the same point, version number one and version number two of Rava. But obviously in version number two, what you see is you see a little more wiggle room. You see a little more relaxation in the second version. So, my benayu ka benayu, lemis mechafifa letfila, ulamechaf biyamama, ulamit babalaylam. So the Gemara says, as far as differences between them, so the difference between them would be, now I'm going to read the Gemara and translate the Gemara literally, but Tosfos is not going to walk away with the literal translation. So first, a literal translation. So shall we put the chafif and the tefillah right next to one another? And can she do the chafifa during the day and tovel at night? Now, that's the literal translation of the Gemara, and that would be the difference between version number one and version number two. And in the literal translation of the Gemara, it basically sounds like this. In version number one, what does it come out to? It comes out to that there must be a chafifa immediately followed by the tefillah. Whereas in version number two, no, that doesn't have to be. In version number one, you must do the same. You must do both chafifa and tefillah on the same day. And in version number two, no, you can do chafifa in the day and tefillah at night. Now, Tosfos says the reason why we're not going to be saying the Gemara like that, if you see the Tosfos, Ika beinayu, lo mayri hacha, or Tosfos third to last from the bottom, lo mayri hacha mida batzracha samach chafifa letefillah. We are not talking about the requirement of doing the chafifa and then immediately doing tefillah afterwards. Now, Tosfos is saying that because Tosfos knows the Gemara coming up. And in the Gemara coming up, later on this morning, we're going to be talking about perhaps chafifa one day, tefillah 4 days later. That's coming up later. We're going to see that later on. So, and the Gemara itself is going to hedge a little bit on 4 days later, 3 days later. But from the Gemara coming up, you know that there's not an absolute requirement that chafifa and tefillah have to be done in proximity to one another. So therefore, Tosfos says, I'll tell you the way I'd much rather read our Gemara, and that is ling in litlos achra hatefillah. Oh. So Tosfos says that as far as our Gemara is concerned, our Gemara is only talking about this idea of tliya, meaning we're not talking about how quick, how short an interval between chafifa and tefillah. It should be done, the interval should be as short as possible. But in terms of when you discover a chatzitza afterwards, can you be tola? Can you say that the chatzitza occurred after the tefillah, not before the tefillah? That is the only discussion of our Gemara says Tosfos. So in terms of tliya, in terms of blaming the chatzitza or assigning the chatzitza to after the tefillah as opposed to before the tefillah, that's the difference between the two statements of Rava. According to Rava, there's no cushion. Meaning, according to the first statement of Rava, if she does chafifa and tefillah with no interval of time and then discovers the chatzitza afterwards, that's okay. But once there is an interval of time, so now we have to be concerned. If she discovers the chatzitza afterwards, the chatzitza came beforehand. In version number two, so there's more cushion. Now, how much is there more cushion? Hard to say. The Gemara just simply says ba'osar ayom, as long as it was within the same day. Okay, that's the way Tosfos reads the Gemara. Amarava. We're continuing in the Gemara. Four lines from the bottom. Isha lo samar agabe klei cheres v'titbom. A woman shouldn't be standing on earthenware and tovel, meaning obviously the mikvah is a pool of water, and so on the bottom of the mikvah. So what is it? So it's usually earth ground. Sometimes the mikvahs are constructed as long as they're built into the ground. So it could be that you have some sort of cement on the bottom. But over here, what we're learning is earthenware kalim. You can't be standing on any kind of earthenware apparatus. Why? So Rava doesn't explain. He doesn't explain. So the Gemara now is going to offer a couple suggestions. So Rav Kahana thinks it has to do with perhaps a gzera, an gzera of mechatzos. Now, to explain this better, so I'll say the Rashi outside, but you can see the Rashi inside. Back then, so they had the shvitz, right? You took a bath in the good old days. So nowadays we have this thing called indoor plumbing. It's amazing. So in the old days, so you wanted to go to the bathhouse, you go to the bathhouse. So that's where the merchatzos. And back then, the construction of the merchatzos, it was kli cheres. I don't know why, but okay, whatever. For whatever reasons, obviously, that they had, that was their bathhouse was made up of kli cheres. Rashi describes the benches being made up of kli cheres. But anyway, the bathhouses were made out of kli cheres. And so, if you are in a kosher mikvah, but you are utilizing part of the kosher mikvah is made up of kli cheres, so in your mind you're thinking to yourself, oh, it's basically a shvitz, right? It's the bathhouse. So what difference is it if I go here, if I go to a regular bathhouse? I'll just go to a regular bathhouse, meaning not a mikvah. It's constructed the same manner. So that is Rav Kahana's suggestion in terms of why Rava said that if you're standing on kli cheres in the mikvah, it's no good, gzera. People will confuse and people will think, oh, I can go to the regular bathhouse. So the Gemara seems to reject this. So I'm sorry, before we get there, Ha'al gabi sosa shapir dami. So that means now that the issue really is the material. Meaning it's not that you're standing on kalim in the mikvah, it's the issue is earthenware. And if, let's say, I took out the earthenware kalim and I replaced it with silsa, blocks of wood, and now she's standing in the mikvah on blocks of wood, that's okay, right? So Amalei Rav Chanan min Arda, sometime Amai Mishum Debais. So Rav Chanan says, no, you misunderstood. That's not the reason behind Rava. The reason behind Rava is not a function of gzera, but rather it's because we're worried about the woman and her level of fear. Right? Going to the mikvah already is an anxious time, and then you make the mikvah experience uncomfortable, i.e., she's not standing on firm ground, but she's standing on some sort of kli, where either it's a kli cheres or it's a block of wood, it doesn't matter. So she's not sure of her footing, okay. And so what's going to happen now is that she's going to tovel in the mikvah, but she's not going to do a good tefillah because she's so anxious and she's so scared. And so therefore the reason behind Rava is not because it's kli cheres, but rather because it's kalim. It's just simply that she is not sure-footed in the mikvah. And it doesn't matter now what exactly she's going to be standing on, whether she's standing on earthenware, where she's standing on blocks of wood. That's the reason behind Rava. Continuing the Gemara, last line of the Amud, Amar of Shmuel ben Rav Yitzchak, Isha, lo titbo benamal. A woman shouldn't tovel at the port. Okay, so usually, especially in industrialized cities, that are by the sea or by the ocean, so you have ports, and so she shouldn't tovel over there. Now, you could say a pshat, and by the way, some do. You could say a pshat that it has to do with the fact that it's a public area, and a woman shouldn't be toveling in a public area. And that's a possible pshat in the Gemara, but I'm going to stay with Rashi in the course of these Gemaras. And Rashi says that no, the issue over here, the focus over here of the Gemara, the problem with the port is that the dirt around the area. Now it could be the dirt immediately before you go into the water, it could be the dirt in the water itself. But anyway, it's filled with mud. And what's going to end up happening is that she's going to be walking to the edge of the water by the port. She's going to step her foot in mud. And basically, she's going to get a bunch of dirt on her, and that'll be a chatzitza. That's the way Rashi explains it. Rashi benamal. So first of all, Rashi describes it as a port. Okay, good. Makam shasfinos nivkaos shema'alos tit v'chotzeitz. So because the boats disembark from this area, so there's tremendous amount of mud, and so she's going to be stepping her foot in it, and it's going to be muddy, and that will serve as a chatzitza. Now, The Gemara says that, look, she'll come out of this port mikvah and she'll look at herself and she thinks she's fine. But the Gemara says, but that's not the case. Because it's so muddy over there. She definitely got muddy. She doesn't see the mud as she's coming out. It could have come out as she was walking out of the water. But in other words, it's an area that's full of mud. And therefore, I'm sorry, Birduni Nafal. All right, read one more word. Okay, that's the another halacha. We stop with Rava, right?
But she gets mud after the mikvah.
Yes, that's fine.
That's right.
No, but the assumption of the Gemara is that she's stepping in the mud before she goes into the mikvah. Okay. Samach Zayin Amid Aleph, top of the line, Avud Shmuel. The father of Shmuel, interesting way to describe somebody. Why not give him, describe him by his name? Normally people are not assigned a name based on who their son is. Well, it depends who your son is. If your son is Shmuel, so then maybe yes. But anyway, regardless, he's throughout Shas always described as Avud Shmuel, the father of Shmuel, and he did the following. Ava Labante, Mikvaz B'yom Nisan, Umavtse B'yom Tishrei. So he did the following for his daughters. And that is that so they would have a mikvah. So in Yom Nisan, he would make a mikvah for them. And so the Nisan is the beginning of the spring. And in the month of Tishrei, the beginning of the fall, so he would make mafte, he would make mats for them. Okay, now, in order to understand this, we did this before. This Avud Shmuel came up a couple times throughout Shas, more than a couple. And so we've done this a number of times, so let's do it again. The more times we get to go over it, the more comfortable we're going to be. Toveling in the mikvah can be done in one of two ways. You can either tovel in a mayan or a mikvah. A mayan is a natural wellspring. A mikvah is a collected pool of rainwater. Okay, there's fundamental differences between a wellspring and a pool of water. A lot of differences. I'm not going to go through them, all of them right now, but just the ones that facilitate understanding of our Gemara. When you're talking about a natural wellspring, so obviously it is a current. It's running. And so this is in halacha what's referred to as zochlin. And as such, you tovel in the mayan, in the wellspring, and even though the water is running, that is perfectly acceptable. If it happens to be stationary, so presumably that would be okay, but that's not its nature. Its nature is that it's running, and you could tovel while it's running. However, when it comes to the collected pool of rainwater, so there it has to be ashborin. Ashborin means that it has to be a stationary body of water, so that when you're toveling in the collected rainwater, so it has to be a stationary, non-moving body of water. If the mei mikvah is in motion while you're toveling in it, now obviously when you go in, you're going to be making some rippling and some waves, but that's not the point. The point is that the water itself, the body of water itself, has to be stationary, and so when you go in, it has to be a stationary body of water. If the rainwater is in motion, so that will disqualify the mei mikvah. So the mei mikvah cannot be a running body of water, but the mei mikvah has to be a stationary body of water. In the springtime, in the springtime, so it's immediately followed after the winter, in Eretz Yisrael, and this is Avud Shmuel, so I'll move out to Bavel, but it's the same story over there, so we're just past the rain season. And so in the rainy season, so what's happening now is that the rain is providing a tremendous contribution to the rivers, meaning the rivers are now going to be a blend of both the spring water, and on top of that, it's also going to be the rainwater as well. And in the month of Nisan, so now there's a legitimate concern that your springs are going to be a hybrid of both rainwater and spring water. Now, if there's more rainwater than spring water, so what we have now is a pasul mikvah. Because now you have, assuming there's a majority of rainwater, so now you have this rainwater that's in motion, and therefore is going to disqualify this spring, this river, as a mikvah. So, what did Shmuel do? So what Shmuel did is he basically made a little bit of a cutoff of the river, and so he diverted some of the he made like a little what's it called, just a small ditch next to the river, and so he allowed the water to go from the river into the ditch. The ditch now held that water stationary, and now his daughters could tovel into that small ditch on the side. That's what he did in the beginning of the fall. What about the beginning of the beginning of the spring? What about the beginning of the fall? So in the beginning of the fall, so now that was at the end of the summer. The springs are fine. Toveling in the springs would be fine. It just happens to be that the water is at that point in time, it's low, and so it gets a little bit muddier. So the way Rashi describes it, he puts mats on the ground so that they could walk on the mats, so that their feet don't get dirty and they don't get a chatzitza. Okay, these are the institutions that Avuah d'Shmuel did for his daughters, so they would successfully tovel in the mikvah, and it would be a kasher tefillah. I'm Rav Gidol Marav, continuing in the Gemara. Nas natavsha livna v'tavla v'alsalo alta la tefillah afagav dehashaleka emer b'rediuni nafal. Another piece of advice that was given by Rav Gidol Marav, and that is that when a woman, let's say, she feeds her son, and immediately after feeding her son, she then tovels in the mikvah. So now, feeding your son, we're talking about an infant son, so it's messy, and so the assumption is that plenty of food not only went into her son's mouth, but on herself as well. Now she tovels in the mikvah, and even if she, as she comes out of the mikvah and she does not see any food on her, we have to assume that she got dirty before going into the mikvah, and therefore the assumption is that this tefillah was not good, and she'll have to tovel again. Amar Rami Bar Ada Hani Rabde de Kusilsa. I'll tell you, Yom Alachaitse, Mikamba Elachaitse. A woman who went through the bloodletting procedure, okay, standard therapeutic practice in the good old days, is that they would have they would bloodlet, and it was a therapy. And so obviously the bloodletting required you to take needles and put them into your skin and to create a puncture and a wound. But it was a wound that was for purposes of therapy. And so what happens is that you had an opening, a cut, and it would scab over. So if you're toveling within 3 days of bloodletting, so Rami Bar Abba says that's fine. Rami Bar Abba, Rami Bar Chama, different gersos, but he says that's fine. At talsa yom until 3 days, it is not a chatzitza, but mikan ve'ele chaitze, but from that point going forward, it is going to be a chatzitza. It obviously begs some sort of explanation why. Why is it not a chatzitza within the first 3 days, and why is it a chatzitza after 3 days? So if you take a look at Rashi over here, he doesn't say much, but he does say, Rashi, Talsa Yume, so Galdan Rach. So Rashi says is that if there is any kind of scabbing within the first 3 days, it's really soft. Umechubar, and it's connected to your body, meaning it's not dried up, crusty scab, but it's still a fresh scab. And that, says Rashi, is still considered part and parcel of your body. V'havi keguf habasar. And therefore, Rashi says it doesn't provide a chatzitza. If, however, after 3 days, so the scab now is old and crusty, and you scrape it a little bit and it can come off, so therefore, at this juncture, it does serve as a chatzitza, and therefore, it needs to be scraped off. And the women, when preparing themselves for a mikvah, so if they have an old scab, it's delicate work, but you got to make sure that the crust is removed. But obviously, if you rub too hard, you're just going to open up the wound again. So, you know, sensitivity to both issues. Amar mar ukva lifluf sheba'ayin lach enu chotzeit yavesh chotzeit. So if you have some sort of lifluf in the eye, okay, it's some sort of cosmetic. If it's in its moist state, so it's not going to be a chatzitza. Wet is not a chatzitza in the mikvah. Dry is. So if it's in a wet state, it's not a chatzitza, but Yavish chotzeitz, but once it's dry, it's chotzeitz. Emes anikra yavish mishah shemascha leirok. And it's considered dry the moment it starts turning either yellowish or green, whichever color you prefer. Amr shmuk chol shebesochayin. Now, what about the chol? Chol is something that's discussed throughout Shas, and that is basically some sort of salve ointment that's put into the eye. So if it's chol shebesochayin and a chotzeitz, so if it's not going to be chatzitza, but if it's put on the eye, so it's going to be chatzitza. Now let's say the eye happens to flutter a lot. So with a lot of movement of the eye, so what's going to happen with this ointment is that it's going to, the assumption is it's not going to dry up. And as a result of that, it's still in its wet state. And so therefore, it will not be a chatzitza. I'm Rav Yochanan Pascha ina bioser or atzma ina bioser lo asa la tefila. Rav Yochanan and the halacha of how your eyes should be when you go into the mikvah. So if you open your eyes up too much, no good. If you squint your eyes shut tight, that's also no good. Okay. So your eyes have to be in a relaxed state when they go into the mikvah. An important Tosfos over here. Tosfos says, Tosfos third one from the top. Lakach yishlomo lekol isha atovel shelo titbo v'tiftach einaha. Okay, so Tosfos says make sure that when teaching women about how to tefillin the mikvah, this is an important halacha, right? Very practical halacha in terms of not squinting too tightly, not opening too wide, but again, a relaxed state. In fact, Tosfos over here says that going back to the topic of opening of the mouth, so Tosfos over here says that shouldn't press your lips tight one against the other. But again, also your mouth has to be in a relaxed state as well. The water doesn't have to go into your mouth, but it has to be roi libias mayim. Tosfos at the bottom of this particular Tosfos, he says that also in terms of just general body position, we're going to talk more about this a little bit in just a moment in the Gemara. But v'gam tzarech, last two lines of Tosfos, v'gam tzarech l'lamda l'harchik yarkoseh ketsas. Right, her thigh should be separated just a little bit. That's coming up in the Gemara, says Tosfos. But again, the position that a woman should be when they're in the mikvah is a relaxed position. They don't necessarily have to be relaxed, but at least their body position has to be a relaxed position when going into the mikvah, so that the water could at least potentially go into the areas. Okay, back to our Gemara. Amar of Yochanan. No, we just did that. Amar Ish Lakish. Haisha lo titbo ela derech kedei lasa. So when a woman tovers in the mikvah, so she should do so derech kedei lasa. Now, literally, the Gemara reads as the way she grows. Obviously, that doesn't read well. So gederech kedei lasa means that she doesn't have to be in any kind of strange or unusual position. She has to be in a normal position. Now, if we can try to clarify that just a little bit more. So we're going to use the Mishnah Negayim to help us clarify that. It's interesting how we're going to use the Mishnah Negayim to teach us about how to tovel in the mikvah. The Mishnah Negayim is talking about a examination that's done by a Kohen on a man or a woman who has a nega. Now, here's the story with a nega. Nega is only going to be metami a person if the tzaras is on an exposed area of their body. If it's on an area that is a folded area, so the Kohen does not have to lift up the arm to see under the armpit. Not for tzaras. I understand. Medical examinations, yes. But for tzaras, no. Tzaras only has to be on normally exposed parts of the body. And so what we're going to do over here is look at this Mishnah Negayim, describing the person's position for an examination for tzaras, and use it now to basically describe the position the person needs to be while toveling in the mikvah. So here's the Mishnah Negayim, Kedana, Naish Nira Ka'oder, Umos Exasim. So as far as the man is concerned, so no different than when he's hoeing or when he is harvesting the olive tree. Okay, I know we don't have great mental pictures in our head of what exactly is the Mishnah describing, right? The position needs to be in during the examination, right? The Kohen says, okay, like you're harvesting an olive tree. So all of us in the room would look at the Kohen and say, what do you want me to do? So I understand to us it doesn't speak so well, but. The idea is that you don't have to reach your arm up high in the air. In other words, it's a comfortable position. It's normal position. Isha, this is still the Mishnah Negayim. So Nirika Regis Omenikas Benam. So like she's weaving or like she's nursing her child. So again, a position that does not require contortion, but just a normal position in terms of how she normally is. Regarding the construction of a mikvah. The halacha is that the mikvah has to hold your body all at the same time. Now, in theory, the mikvah could be like 1 foot deep. 1 foot is really shallow. The mikvah could be like 2 feet deep, and it could be really very wide at its base. And in theory, that could be okay, but it's not okay because in order now to go into that mikvah, well, I mean, you could lay down flat. That's possible. But in other words, if it requires you to crouch down into the mikvah, that's not a good mikvah. Meaning the mikvah has to be good enough where you can put your head down and obviously you'll squat a little bit in the mikvah, but you won't crunch down. They talk in halacha, I should be saying the Shulchan Aruch over here, that the mikvah should be a little bit higher than an average person's navel in terms of the height of the mikvah.
What's so average person's?
Navel, belly button.
Not
that
achuzah.
Huh? It's the halacha is a zeris above the navel. That's the halacha. Okay. So the... But now we have a better understanding. It has to do with the fact that when you're going into the mikvah, you shouldn't be squatting down in the mikvah. Amar Rav Baravuna, Nima Achas Kshura. Okay, we're now on the halachas of chatzitza. I told you, we're weaving in and out over here of the halachas of mikvah, chatzitza, chafifa, and now we're at chatzitza. Okay. We're going to learn today one of the most basic rules as it relates to chatzitza. It's coming up in just a moment, but first, a halacha. Ani ma'achas k'shura chotzetzis. If you have one hair, and the one hair is knotted up against itself, that's a chatzitza. Shalosh eino chotzetzis. If it is three hairs, that's not a chatzitza. Shtayim eino yodea. But by two hairs, I don't know. So, now, this gemara is a little bit challenging because, assuming we're talking about one strand of hair, which we are, one strand of hair not against itself, so you understand the basic idea of the gemara. Because that one strand of hair is obviously so, it's so small, so when you knot it, there's no way that water is going to get into that knot. And that's a chatzitza. Three hairs, however, are going to be a little bit thicker, and even if it's knotted against itself, but with the three hairs, however, there'll be room for water to come in. And two, he says, I don't know. Now, but even as I say over the Gemara, like, understand, if we're just talking about one hair, so one hair is obviously a really small minority of the person's body. And even if I were just to localize to the hair, it's a really small amount of the person's hair. And that one hair gets knotted up against itself, and now we're talking about a chatzitza, and we're about to learn in just a moment that if it's miut ve'eino makpid, if it's a small minority, and it's not, and you're not makpid, so that's not a chatzitza. So if it's one hair on your head that's knotted up, so the Gemara describes it as being a chatzitza, so most probably what the Gemara means, and I'm not saying this is an absolute, but most probably what the Gemara means is that we just mean that one hair being knotted, meaning we've now prevented water from coming in. Now, if I have that for many hairs on the head, where many hairs on the head are knotted in this manner, so now we're looking at a chatzitza. If, however, it's three strands of hair because it's so wide, so therefore water could go in, and that's not going to be a chatzitza. Now, the two hairs, he says, I don't know. Am Rav Yitzchak Devar Torah. I'm sorry. Rav Yochanan Amar. Ein lanu alachas. Now, Rav Yochanan says, no, one hair and only one hair is a chatzitza. Two, three, or of course anything more than that, folded up against itself, not up against itself, is not going to be a chatzitza. And here we go. A really big halacha, it's a yesod. I'm Rav Yitzchak Dvar Torah. Rav Yitzchak opens up with saying the words Dvar Torah. Rashi over here says that the usage of the word Dvar Torah over here means it's halacha l'moshe m'sinai. Rashi takes us back to the beginning of Masechta Sukkah, where the Gemara over there says, shi'ur and chatzitzin, mechitzin. The halachas of amounts, shi'ur, chatzitza, our discussion. Anything that serves as an interposition between the water and your body. And also mechitzin, the halachas of mechitza. Well, this is why it's over there in Sukkah. Because in Sukkah, in the first parak, it's all about hilchos mechitza. What is the laws regarding the construction of a wall? So all these are not beferish in the Torah. They're all halacha l'moshe m'sinai. So over here in Nida, now we're on the topic of chatzitza. So dvar Torah rubo makpid alav chotzeitz. If it is the majority and you're makpid, so that will be a chatzitza. Rubo veino makpid alav. If it's the majority but you're not makpid, you simply don't care. So eino chotzeitz min haTorah. It's not a chatzitza. V'gazra rubo sheino makpid mishum rubo makpid. However, if the majority of your body is covered with something, even though you're not makpid, but the Chachamim were worried that if we allow that, people are then going to make the mistake of saying, well, it's rov and I wasn't makpid, that's not a chatzitza. Okay, if it's rov and I'm makpid, that also is not a chatzitza. So the Chachamim made gzera. V'gazra al miyuto ha-makpid mishum rubo ha-makpid. So the Gemara says, v'ligzer nami al miyuto shein ha-makpid mishum miyuto ha-makpid. So the Gemara says, why don't we make a gzera? Why didn't the Chachamim make a gzera? In that if it's a miut she'eno, I'm sorry, yeah, if it's a miut she'eno makpid, so shouldn't we make a gzera? Meaning, miut she'eno makpid will lead to miut hamakpid, or miut she'eno makpid will lead to rubo she'eno makpid. So why aren't we worried about that? So he gufa gzera, v'ane nikom v'nigzer gzera l'gzera. So the Gemara says that's two steps removed. Meaning, min ha-Torah, what is a chatzitza? Rubo hamakpid. Now, the gzeras de Rabbanan are either one of those two variables removed. It's either rubo she'eno makpid, or it's miut hamakpid, where we just change one of the two variables. But if both variables change, and it's a miut she'eno makpid, that's two steps to get away from the halach l'moshe m'sinai. That's a gzera l'gzera, and the chachamim do not make a gzera l'gzera. Okay, so a miut she'eno makpid is not going to be a chatzitza. Minhag Yisrael, of course, is to make sure to remove all chatzitzas, and even a minority. Discussion in terms of this rule of Rav Yitzchak. Is it talking about the hair? Is it talking about the body? Is it talking about both? Another big question is that when we talk about rubo and miut, are we talking about the entire body in total? Are we talking about section? Do we section off the body? Meaning, when we're talking about the hair and we're talking about a chatzitza in the hair, are we looking at the hair and the totality of the body? Or do we look at the hair as one section and the rest of the body is in another section. So even though we learned the Gemara, there are a lot of follow-up questions that need resolution. Amar Rav, Nida Bizmana Eino Tovelas Ela Balayla. A Nida, who is going Bizmana. Now Rav over here is going back to the Din Min HaTorah. A woman is a Nida for 7 days. Regardless, she started bleeding on day one. Regardless of whether she's menstruating for the all 7 days or none of the next, all of the next 6 days or none of the next 6 days. So we know, we've seen this already numerous times. She's going to be a Nida for those 7 days. The night of the eighth, she tovels in the mikvah. And she can't tovel during the daytime, not on the seventh day, but she tovels the night of the eighth day. So that's what he's describing as Nida Bizmana. So she tovels only at night. She can't tovel during the day. Vishalo Bizmana, however, let's say for whatever reason she didn't tovel in the mikvah that night. And now, so she's on day eight. In theory, she could tovel in the mikvah on day eight. So Rav teaches us, Shalo Bizmana tovels bemba yombe malayla. So Rav says, not just in theory, in practice. Rav says she could tovel in the mikvah on day eight. Why not? So Rav Yochanan Amra, Bein Bizmana, Bein Shalo Bizmana, Eina tovel asel balayla, Mishol Srach Mita. And Rav Yochanan says, I'll tell you why not. No, a woman doesn't tovel in the mikvah, certainly not on day seven, everyone agrees, but not on day eight as well, and not on day nine. And the only time a woman tovels is at night. Why? Srach Bita. Because her daughter is going to see mom going to the mikvah. Now, obviously, there's obviously, it's Nias Ishos over here, but you're in a family, and kids know. And I've come to learn over the years, they know more than you think. So the so kids know. And the daughter is going to see the mom toveling in the mikvah. Again, you know, she'll know. And she sees her going during the day. And the daughter is not going to remember now with her childhood memories, oh, it's because it was Shalom Bizmana as opposed to Bizmana. Oh, it was day eight, right? She'll think, oh, maybe it was also day seven. Maybe that as well. And it's educationally too confusing for the child. So Rav Yochanan says that a woman should only go to the mikvah at the night, not during the day. And even if it's day eight, and even though in theory she can go to the mikvah during the day, but because of the erroneous lessons that she'll be teaching her daughter, so therefore only at night. V'afrav hadarbe, Narav ended up capitulating to the position of Yochanan. The Amar Rav Chia Barashi, Amar Rav Nida Bein Bezmana, Bein Shalom Bezmana, Yine Tavela Sal Balayla, Mishum Srach Bita. Rav also, later, came to this realization that this is a correct conclusion. A woman should only be going to the mikvah at night, even if it's day eight and onward. Itkin Rav Idi Binarash, Lemitbal Biyuma de Tamnanya Mishum Aryasa. Now, Rav Idi, in the town of Narash, he allowed the women to tovel on the eighth day. But over there, it was circumstantial. There in the town of Narash, going out at night was dangerous. He describes lions. There were wild animals roaming at night. And it was dangerous for women to tovel at night. So therefore, they waited to day eight and they tovel during the day. But again, not going against Rav and Rav Yochanan, but just over there, circumstances demanded a special takana. Rav Acher bar Yaakov bit Papunya, Mishum Ganave. So Rav Acher bar Yaakov also allowed the women of his town to tovel in day eight because they were Ganavim. So you went out at night and you were exposed to thieves. And so once again, it's dangerous. And so therefore, a special institution that women tovel during the day on day eight. Rav Yehuda Pum Pedisa, Mishum Tzina. Rav Yehuda allowed women to tovel in the mikvah in Pum Pedisa because it was too cold at night. Rava Ben Mechuzah Mishum Avulai. Rava Mechuzah allowed the women to tovel on day eight because of Abulai. Abulai Rashi over here offers a couple of explanations of what that is. See the Rashi inside. Abulai Rashi is above where we are in the Gemara. So Sha'orei Ha'ir Va'uvdi Kochavim Hein. The gatekeepers of the city, they were non-Jews. So could be that Rashi over here is just simply alluding to the fact that it was the gatekeepers themselves that were, quote unquote, you know, guarding the gate, but at the same time also posed a threat to the women as they went through the gate. Lishna Achrin Rashi also offers another pshat. Binyanim shel ma'aros hayu b'derech beis ha'tvila v'im tipol sham tistaken. Also, just to get to the mikvah, so it was a treacherous path. There were a lot of pits on the way. They're going to fall into the pit while they're walking at night. They're not going to see where they're going. And so therefore, it's a dangerous situation. Therefore, he instituted there that they tovel during the day. So, Srach Bita demands that a woman tovels at night at all times, even though in theory she could tovel during the day. It's Acher's Mana. But the Srach Bita demands that she tovels in the mikvah at night. However, if there are extenuating circumstances, and the Gemara just gave us a bunch of extenuating circumstances. So then the Rav of the year can institute that tefillah be done during the daytime.
But that's late still. You
could have gone, like, oh, yeah, but that, right, that can be on day 7. Meaning, if we're assuming like we're going alibi de araisa, it can't be on day 7. It has to be after the Zman. For us nowadays, it gets easier because our seventh day is Shiva Nikim. And during Shiva Nikim, you could tefillah during the day. In fact, it's funny you should say that. That's what we're going to be discussing right now. So the Gemara says, you know that we're all suffix zavas, meaning we're going to go back to yesterday's daf. So we learned in yesterday's daf that nowadays we take on the chumrah of Rabbi Zera. And the chumrah of Rabbi Zera is that regardless of how much blood is being discharged, even tipa dam kechardal, even just one drop of blood, so the women treat themselves like a zava gadola, which means that they're counting Shiva Nikiyam. So now, Shiva Nikiyam, so let's go back to the halachas of Ziva. Zava gadola and Shiva Nikiyam. So what's the halacha? The halacha is that you're a zava gadola, so now you have to count Shiva Nikiyam 7 clean days, and then when do you tovel? On the 7th day. Now, for as far as Tahara is concerned, you have to wait till nightfall. You need Harav Shemesh, but you tovel on the 7th day, and you wait till nightfall. So now the Gemara asks a wonderful question. So now nowadays that we accept the Chumrah Rabbi Zera, so shouldn't we be allowed to tovel during the day? On day 7? So lit balina b'yamama d'shviyam. Ah, so it's such a good question.
Without any extenuation.
Yeah, you're right. Just simple, that's a simple halacha. For Shiva Nikim, you tovel on day 7. So we should be able to tovel on day 7 of the Shiva Nikim. So the Gemara says, no, we don't. And I'll tell you why not. Mishum de Rabbi Shimon, because of Rabbi Shimon. The Tanya, the Gemara quotes the following braisa. Echad, achar titaher. So the Torah describes that after the Shiva Nikim, she's going to be tahor. Achar titaher. Achar lekulan. As far as the achar is concerned, that's written in the pasuk, it means achar lekulan. It's after everything. Meaning, she needs Shiva Nikim, and they have to be contiguous. They have to be 7 clean days. What you can't do is observe 3 clean days. Okay, so you had a little discharge. Okay, so you'll come back and you'll restart your count again with day number 4 when you're ready to. And day number 5 when you're ready. You can't do that. Meaning the seven clean days have to be a contiguous 7 clean days. So achle kulan, shalote tuma mafsekes b'nayim. There could be no hafsek in the counting of the 7 clean days. And so that means if there's any discharge at any point in time, so what you're going to do just simply is you're going to have to reset when you're ready to start again. You start at 1. Rabbi Shimon Omer, achar titar, achar maisa titar. Now Rabbi Shimon says, now when do you tovel in the mikvah? So achar maisa. What maisa are we talking about? The counting. Meaning you wake up in the morning on day 7, you count, this is day number 7, and then you tovel in the mikvah. It's early. What do you mean? The day 7 is not over. So Rashi over here invokes the idea of mikvah sayom kikulo. Good. So you tovel in the morning. Aval. So this is Rabbi Shimon talking. That's true. But Amru Chachamim Asalasos Ken Shema Tavoli De Safek. However, the concern is as follows: is that it's a bit of a gamble because you tovel in the morning on day 7. So okay, Aliba de Torah, this would be fine. However, what if you have a discharge anytime later in the day in day 7? So that undoes it. Undoes the Tefillah B'Mikvah. It undoes the Shiva Nikiyam. And so therefore, because of this concern, so therefore, Rabbi Shimon says, as Gzeira de Rabbanan, the Chachamim said not to tovel on day 7. And so as a result of this, minig is for women, even though we accept the Chumrah and Rabbi Zera, but we also accept upon ourselves the halacha of Rabbi Shimon, and that is that a woman on day 7 of a Shiva Nikim does not tovel in the mikvah, right, but rather waits till night. Okay. I know it's funny, but we'll stop here. Tomorrow we'll pick up with the halachas of Chafifa and the proximity between the Chafifa and Tefillah B'Mikvah. Just as a quick recap. So again, a lot of halachas today, a lot of halachas regarding the mikvah, Chafifa, Chatzitza. Just to quickly round out all the halachas that we did today. Number one, the Chafifa, the cleansing of her body and the examination of her body should be done within proximity of her tefillah. We're going to start tomorrow morning with this halacha. But as far as why it's necessary, so we learned today, because if she discovers the chatzitza afterwards, so then we could be told and we could say that it came afterwards, as long as chafifa and tefillah were done right next to one another. Okay, there are shades of gray in this halacha because there were two versions of Rava. Okay, that's the beginning of today's shir. We also talked about the woman not standing on kli cheres. Why not? So Rav Kahana thought, but the Gemara concluded that it has to do with the fact that she's going to be scared, and therefore she won't do a proper tefillah in the mikvah. The woman shouldn't tov on the port. Rashi says because it's muddy and the mud's going to get on her even before she goes into the water. Avua de Shmuel did some institutions for her for his daughter so that they could properly tovel in the river or on the river bank, depending on the season. And we explained why earlier this morning. Rav Gidol Marav told us that if a woman feeds her son and then tovels in the mikvah, we assume that the food got on her and the tefillah is not a good tefillah, and she'll have to do the tefillah again. A fresh wound is not a chatzitza, an old wound is a chatzitza. Fresh and old is 3 days, says the Gemara. Our Ofer talked about putting on some sort of eye shade, and whether or not that's a chatzitza, wet it's not, dry it is. Shmuel told us that the chol, the salve that they put in their eye, is if it's in the eye, it's not a chatzitza. If it's on the eye, so as long as she's not fluttering, it would be a chatzitza. Reish Lakish taught us that the woman, when going to the mikvah, has to be in a normal, comfortable position. She doesn't have to stretch. She doesn't have to raise her arms up in the air. Just in a normal position, like we learned in the Mishnah Negayim. In terms of chatzitza, we learned the big rule of chatzitza, which is that if it's rubo makpid, that's a chatzitza min haTorah. If I took off one of those variables, it's a gzera derabanan. If I took off both of those variables, it's a mir she'eino makpid. It's not a chatzitza bichlal. Rav says that Anida Bizmana has to tovel at night. Anida Shlo Bizmana can tovel during day 8, but Rav Yochanan corrects, or he disagrees. Rav Yochanan says that because of Srach Bita, because her daughter is going to see mom toveling in the mikvah during the day, not understanding the nuances, so she's going to end up, the daughter's going to end up growing up toveling in the day, during the day later in her life. And so therefore, a woman should always tovel at night because of Srach Bita. Rav ended up capitulating to Rav Yochanan, extenuating circumstances under certain circumstances where it's dangerous for women to go out at night. So then the Chachamim did institute that women tovel during the daytime. What about nowadays where we adopt the Chumra of Rabbi Zera? Shiv Nakim would allow a woman to tovel in the seventh day because that's the Halacha Liba D'Araisa. So the Gemara says, yeah, but we subscribe to Rabbi Shimon, where Rabbi Shimon has a Gzera that even though she does tovel during the day, but because of the concern she may see after she tovels the mikvah, so therefore the institution is even bizmanenu, women tovel at night.